You are listening to an RPA production, where people gather. Ladies and gentlemen, Real Paranormal Activity is proud to present The Sandman Lullaby with your host, Patrick Sean Jones.
Sleep, sleep, beauty bright, dreaming in the joys of night. Sleep, sleep in thy sleep, little sorrow, sit and weep. Sweet babe in thy face, soft desire I can trace. Sweet joys and secret smiles, little pretty infant wiles. As thy soft limbs I feel, smiles as the morning still over thy cheek and over thy breast where thy little heart does rest. Oh, the cunning wiles that creep in thy little heart asleep. When thy heart does awake, then the dreadful night shall break.
Can you feel it? Can you feel the power? Man, I was looking at the meters on this the side of the dial, and it was maximized. I hope that you felt that 100%. You are in the Sandman Lullaby here on RPA. Yeah, that's the Real Paranormal Activity Network. You know, I jump in every once in a while just to say, hey, how you doing? How's life? How's your dreams? Are they treating you nice? Where do you want them to go? What do you dream as? And tonight, or today, wherever you may be, we bring you, actually, a listener. I got a hold of a listener. And they said, hey, I'm a dreamer. That's you, Aaron.
Hello, Sean.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody. Yeah, it's like 100, I think, in 64 countries that your beautiful voice is going to.
Oh, well, thank you. No pressure at all.
I sound like a big papa. It's like, big papa, what you want to talk to these women about? I want to talk about the paranormal. You know, that freaks some people out when you talk about dreams and the paranormal.
Well, it is a little bit scary, but I think in an enticing and definitely interesting way. I'm fascinated by this topic.
When did you get this fascination? Was it when you're young or when you got a little older?
Definitely when I was a young girl, I loved dreaming. Now, granted, dreams weren't always pleasant. I definitely had a lot of nightmares as a little girl. But I definitely had some wonderful dreams, you know, the kind that you definitely can't wait to get back to sleep so that you can revisit your dream. So I definitely think it's a fascinating topic. I'm just really excited to be here, and I want to thank you so much.
No.
And thank you to all.
It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure.
Invade your personal space.
No, you're not my personal space, baby. Big Papa loves things like this. Tell me some of your background.
Well, my background is definitely colorful, for lack of better terms. I have a beautiful son. His name is Ethan. He's 12 years old. He's a really amazing kid, very artistic, makes all A's, is in all advanced classes. So that is my number one job, so to speak. But I did go to school for medical assisting and nursing. I have a sales and marketing background. I work for my dad's business, doing marketing for him as well. But I'm looking to go back to school, actually, to become an addictions counselor. I'm a recovering addict, so I don't mind sharing that part of my past is, you know, it's part of me. But that's what's going on with me. I'm looking to go back to school. I want to help people to show them that there's a better way to live. You know, I feel like addicts are some of the most intelligent, colorful, and creative people I've met. And, you know, we kind of cut ourselves short from being who we could be. That's definitely a goal of mine, and I'm actually looking into starting up classes, so maybe I can help touch some lives in a positive way. Use some of my pain and my mistakes to help people. I think that's the most beautiful form of redemption I could possibly do.
See, a lot of people, they, especially when you're in recovery, you have using dreams. And it will freak you the hell out.
Absolutely, yeah.
So can you kind of explain, like, using dream to the listeners? Because a lot of them probably don't understand what a using dream is. And
absolutely. A using dream for me, I'll just share a personal part of my history. I recently had a horrible relapse after 9 years of sobriety, and over a year ago, and eventually that journey led me to incarceration. I just got out of jail on April 10th. I did 11 months. And of course, there was a lot of self-hatred that came along with this, a lot of regret. And just a lot of shame. And so one of the things that stood out to me when I was in there, and I would say it was about my fourth month, you know, and 4 months away from my last use, the dreams started to become very real and very scary. A using dream is perhaps you're in the dream, and for me I was getting a particular drug or making arrangements to get, and it started out where something would happen and something would keep me from actually obtaining the substance. So eventually it got more specific and more detailed, and eventually in the dream I'm using. And you know, I would wake up with sweaty palms, severe anxiety, a lot of chest pressure, you know, and there's a lot of fear, because the one thing that I feared the most upon my release was, you know, going back and going back and backsliding and contacting, you know, people and, you know, that I knew that I could get it from. And so it keeps it really real. I think it can be a healthy thing because, you know, it kind of reminds you, you know, hey, you know, you've got to get serious about this. You've got to get serious about your recovery. But using dreams, you know, it's anywhere from going to get it or, you know, you're actually using it or maybe even seeing in your dream a familiar face, somebody that you used with from time to time or on a daily basis. So very scary stuff, though. Definitely keeps it real.
Especially if you got, like, a drug test the next day.
Actually, that happened to me.
Oh, really? I was just feeling the vibe. And usually most of the people I know that usually have a using dream, it's usually they're like, oh, man, I can't do this because I got a drug test tomorrow.
The first time I ever attempted to get sober was in 2009. I had done 60 days in jail, and I voluntarily went into rehab. And I mean, I didn't know how to live any other way. So my family had kind of started watching Intervention, and they started practicing the tough love, which I'm so glad they did. So I went into rehab, and I remember the whole journey was 18 months, and I wasn't court ordered to go, but I went through the whole process. And I remember having a using dream, and then the next day having to submit a urinalysis, and the fear was so real. I knew I hadn't taken anything or done anything,
but
I was so afraid I was going to fail that test. It sounds ridiculous, but the fear was so real. And, sweaty palms again, you know, anxiety. That's kind of crazy, but it's so real. It is.
How do you advise people to cope with these using dreams? To let them know that's, you know, perfectly natural for the body to give you that information in your mind?
That's an outstanding question. Through rehab, I did learn some tools. You got to have an emergency plan, to keep your sobriety. You have to be willing to go after it, just like you went after your drugs. So one thing that I was told to do was to talk to someone. If you're in an inpatient program, a counselor or, you know, someone that you trust, someone that's got some experience and some, you know, someone safe to talk to, your sponsor. I was told to, you know, and I have done this, talk to a sponsor. Mm-hmm. Journaling is really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it brings these things out, and, you know, over time you can see, you know, your journey, your growth. And they also teach you to, you know, some positive self-talk, you know, like, you're okay, Aaron, it's just a dream. You know, but right away, I would talk to my sponsor or counselor, someone that is in my support network.
On your ratio of good dreams, bad dreams, what do you have more of?
Now I would say, I can't really say percentage wise. I would say that I'm having more. I don't know if I would say good dreams, more interesting dreams.
Okay.
Bad dreams have kind of stopped. I haven't had that many in a long while. So I'm definitely at a place where they're more interesting now. And as time goes on and I'm away from, you know, being in jail and you know, more time between me and my last use, the dreams are starting to get more positive and detail about things that I want, you know, in my future. Seeing these things come to fruition in my dreams, you know, I see myself and my son in a beautiful home, riding in a nice car, or I'm with him at the beach on a vacation. So that's pretty neat. I'm grateful for that.
Okay, I got one question that, this is another kind of taboo question, but, you know, talking about dreams in jail, because you know, a lot of people don't experience the being in jail, especially if you're not like a political prisoner and you might have been caught with like pot on you or something like that. So what's the difference of the dreams in jail and those on the outside, which are more vivid?
Actually, my dreams in jail, and I would have to say a lot of them were actually in my dream. I was actually dreaming that I was in jail or in some sort of confinement, which is, it sounds crazy, but I remember the first real vivid dream that I could remember in jail was me, and I was at a, I thought it to be like a work release where I was still kind of in jail, but I was allowed to go and obtain employment, and for some reason I end up in this trailer. I'm not sure why or how or who was residing in there, but I was actually being sought after. The police were looking for me, and I hadn't had a chance to even work yet, and I'm hiding behind an Afghan blanket behind someone's recliner. So most of my dreams, like I said, were in the beginning, or at least the first half of my time there, was like me in some sort of confinement. One dream I dreamt that I was in, it had to have been another country, because there was languages being spoken that I didn't recognize, and the people looked different, but kind of reminded me of Auschwitz, if you will,
right.
The Holocaust camp in Poland. It seemed like that because it looked similar, which I'm a huge World War II buff. You know, I've read a lot of books on it. I've been studying it for years, and just the whole war fascinates me. But I don't know if that's why, you know, because sometimes you can dream about things that you've read about or that you're interested in, and it just comes to you in a different way. But it seemed to me like some sort of prisoner camp.
What's your view on reincarnation?
You know, that's a good question, because I've read a lot and watched a lot of documentaries and videos about, you know, some dreams being kind of related to, or someone had believed it to be, a past life. And so, yeah, especially in a lot of the videos I watched were young children, where they, you know, they would dream about maybe being in a war or some sort of service, maybe an iron worker, if you will, or, you know, being a mother in, you know, maybe the early 1800s or something. I do believe that, I believe that there's definitely something beautiful, that when we perish, you know, I do believe in God. I'm not afraid to say that. And although I'm a type of person where I kind of have to see something to believe it, or, you know, I it's hard for me to have blind faith. But I believe, part of me believes that there is a possibility, a good possibility of reincarnation. There's some dreams that I've had that were so vivid and ongoing throughout, you know, my life, that, you know, that I was in an old-style home and farming, foraging my food, hunting, and I was a widow, and I couldn't tell you what period of time exactly, but that dream has been an ongoing dream of mine. So I definitely think it's a possibility that we go on and become, you know, and live another life.
So is that a reoccurring dream, or does the dream continue?
It's reoccurring. I'm always in this dream. I'm always taking care of an ill child, and I'm always working very hard, like in a field around the house, and it's not, you know, easy work. It's, you know, even preparing a meal in these dreams are, you know, a big to do. So I think, you know, I've often wondered, you know, what does this mean? And, you know, I read so many books and, you know, there's a lot of dream interpretation books, you know, dreams from A to Z. Some cultures believe, you know, that dreaming was a form of paranormal communication. My grandmother passed away on my dad's side when I was very young, and she was never able to speak to me. As far as I can remember, she was never able to speak verbally. She had a lot of strokes, a lot of health problems, but we would talk through our hands. You know, one side of her was paralyzed, but, you know, through her, the finger talking that we would do and the affection, there was a lot of love. I didn't get to know her long. She died very young, but I have a lot of dreams about her where she'll be coming to me, and sometimes it'll be just a look. You know, I'll be going through a hard time, something difficult in life, and there'll be no speaking. Like, she won't speak, but somehow through her looks or her stares or the feeling that I get when she approaches me, it's like, you know, she doesn't need to say anything. It's a form of comfort or some way of letting my intuition, you know, tell me what I need to do without her ever saying anything. And I think that, you know, I've read a lot about a lot of people when they lose someone so close to them. It's a very traumatic thing. It's very painful, especially when you don't really, you know, if that person was your whole world, like your whole family. Some people don't have any family and they lose someone that's, you know, it's like losing a huge part of yourself. And through dreams, they're able to visit their loved ones that have passed. And that happens to me a lot. I've lost a lot of friends too, due to the partying lifestyle, you know, growing up and as a teenager. I've lost a lot of friends, car accidents, you know, tragedy, suicide, you know, overdosing, and it's a light cut short, you know. But I've had my friends and family members visit me in my dreams, and so that's another reason why I love, you know, the idea of dreaming. I think it's either, you know, looking, remembering your past, cherishable moments that you want to remember, a way to communicate, you know, with the deceased, and can be a way to also, you know, look into the future, you know. You know, and then it's, you know, our brain activity. You know, some of it can be, you know, you can dream about maybe an argument you had at the office or something. But just lately, I've been looking to study more into the psychology of it. I think Sigmund Freud was the first psychologist to actually start studying and writing about dreams. It's just fascinating to me because, you know, we don't, no one can truly say, well, this is why, you know, and this is what it means. The speculation of it all can be, you know, overwhelming and but also interesting, you know.
Yeah. Quick question. This is usually one of the questions I ask right when we're almost reaching the end. If you can go anywhere in time and space or have meet somebody in your dreams, who would that be or where would you go and why?
Wow. That's such a neat question. I would have to... I would have to say, and it's hard to narrow it down because, you know, I'm fascinated by history and, you know, there's so many people that have done so many amazing things and set the pathway for you know, where we are today. I don't really have a specific person, but I definitely would want to go back to, you know, the World War II era. Actually, I'd love to just meet or talk to one of the soldiers, maybe that, you know, that risked his life or gave his life, you know, to fight the Nazis and what they were doing to people, you know, just the cause. I would love to just, you know, talk to them about, you know, well, first of all, I would definitely love to just thank them for everything, and probably General Patton too. I would love to talk to him.
Yeah, he was big on dreams too.
I'm sorry?
He was big on dreams.
Yes.
He was big on reincarnation and all that.
Yeah, he was a real hero to me, and you know, I definitely have a huge place in my heart for active duty and veterans, but I definitely think I would go back to that time and, you know, just talk to anyone actually from any branch of service, really, and just get an idea from their point of view, you know, what it was really like to be in all that craziness.
See, I think the oldest one that I took care of, because remember, I was back in the day, I was doing nursing assistant stuff.
Yes.
And he was from World War I. And he would slowly walk to the edge of the door. He'd look to his left. He'd look to his right. And he'd say, "Is the coast clear?" And we'd go, "Yeah, yeah." And he'd just look at us and scream, "Run!" So... yeah, he was a cool old guy, but he was a veteran of World War I. I've met plenty of veterans. I've been blessed to have a good conversation. I salute him. I salute our armed forces. And I salute you. You're a good interview. You're deep.
Well, thank you, Sean. I'm really honored that you asked me to. I love your show. I've listened to I've listened to your podcast. My favorite one was the one with Sir Peyton.
Right. Peyton Starr.
Interesting. Yeah. You have a great radio voice, and you know, you're very easy to talk to. So
well, thank you. Thank you.
I definitely think this is your calling.
Well, if I make money on it, I don't make no money doing this. I volunteer for the RPA Network, and like in a little bit tonight, I gotta do my heavy metal show, and so and that's all volunteer at the community radio
show.
Yeah, Psycho Rams, WMNF 88.5 Turbo. Yeah, that's my shout out. Aaron might edit that out, but I doubt it. Let me,
you know,
go ahead.
Before we go, if I may, I have another person I think you would love to talk to. There's a docuseries on Netflix called The Keepers, and if you get time, check it out. It's a true story. Back in the 60s, a really beautiful young nun was murdered, and she was a teacher in an all-girls Catholic school. And I won't give too much of it away, but it's an ongoing cold case, and there's about 7 parts to it. It was actually, it's a hit. It was directed by Ryan White. He's amazing. But Gemma Hopkins, she was on The Keepers, and she was one of Sister Kathy's students.
Oh.
She has a lot of good insight on dreams and, you know.
Well, hook a brother
spiritual.
Up. Hook a brother yeah. up. Might make
yes,
me famous.
I actually sent her a message before I called you.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I'll arrange that if you just let me know what night. And because they do a podcast called Out of the Shadows, I think it is. You're still trying to figure out who murdered her, but there's a huge scandal that goes and a lot of pain and abuse that was underneath all this thing. But she has done amazing work. And because of her work, this is all, you know, this series and and they're actively still looking into the case. So I think she would love to talk to you.
No, so. Hook me up.
Absolutely.
Let me do my exit little thing real quick.
Sure.
Don't forget on... What day are we on? Oh, yeah, on Monday, you have Real Paranormal Activity, the podcast. Yeah, that's with your host, Mr. Aaron Hunter. And on Tuesday, you have Aaron's Horror Show. That's with your host, Aaron Frail. He basically goes through old horror shows and old horror mysteries and anything that says it's horror and lets you know if it really sucks or not. And usually it does, but he does a good job. On Wednesday, we have Terry Davenport with Terry's Mysterious Moments. Cryptoids, ghosts, goblins. He does a lot of research. He's a research man. He's like, that's what I'm going to call him, Professor Terry. Professor Terry, there you go. Professor Terry. He does a good job. And we got like two video ghost adventure shows that are out there. So just check go to realparanormalactivity.com. Most likely you're here right now. So just check out the rest of the show and the shows that are on there. Did that sound like a good pitch?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Amazing.
How do they get in touch with you, or do you not want them to get in touch with you?
With me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My email is it's elabor @yahoo.com.
That was sweet. No, you're very insightful. Very insightful, Aaron. Very insightful. This is good. This is good. This is going in the can. This is a perfect show, and I want to thank all the listeners that basically were happy and able to hear your advice. Last thing, real question. You have the whole world to talk to. Anything to say in your final closing moments?
Well, you know, thank you for the opportunity, and thank you to everyone for allowing me to share. All I want to say is, you know, if you're struggling with, it doesn't even have to be drugs or alcohol, you know, but if you are struggling with that, and just know that there is help, you just got to take that first step, but give yourself a chance, or if you're hurting, you know, reach out to someone, and just be kind to each other. I think love can really solve most of the world's problems, but, you know, a lot of people think, you know, we dream about heroes. I just went and saw Avengers, with my son, Endgame, you know, and just watching his face, you know, when the heroes are in action, you know, and I think everybody can be a hero, and everyone is, even, you know, the dad who goes to work every day and the mom who looks after the kids, you know, and keeps the family going. They are heroes. So just love yourself and love each other. And if you're struggling with drugs and alcohol, get help. You were meant to be so much more. And thank you so much, everyone.
Aaron, you're a hero. Ladies and gentlemen, I have nothing more to say. Same bat time, same bat channel, whoever, whenever that is. That's Aaron. Aaron, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And just stay on hold for a second. And otherwise, absolutely, I'm going to say bye to everybody, because you've been in the Sandman Lullaby.
Evidence something.